A quick note before we start. About 70% of all people who listen to the show on Apple or Spotify don't follow the podcast. If you like the show, please hit that follow button. It ensures that you don't miss an episode, and it really helps spread awareness of the conversations we're having. And if you can leave a comment or a rating, that's even better. Thank you. Okay, let's get back to the show.
I'm Andrew Kitley, and this is my podcast, The Invisible Gift, a show about turning disability into possibility. From a young age, I was told I had a disability that would make it impossible for me to achieve and flourish in life. I struggled in school and felt I was not truly understood or supported. On my long road to becoming the owner of multiple businesses, I have learned that dyslexia was not my disability, but rather my invisible gift. My dyslexia challenged me every day, but it was also what made me into an independent thinker, a creative, and gave me that hard-working mindset that has taught me to never be discouraged by failure. I realised there are many people out there just like me. So I wanted to learn more about them and how we can all transform our greatest challenge into our invisible gift. Welcome to my podcast. Hi everyone, welcome back to season two. I'm Andrew Kitley and this is The Invisible Gift. I'm going to be kicking off the show with telling you a few changes we've made this season to the beginning of the podcast. I wanted to introduce you to James. James is the captain at One Fine Play and he's going to help me sail through these intros and outros for the season.
Hi Andrew, how are you doing?
Good. Hopefully that was the last bit of almost scripted thing I'm going to say.
hopefully you're doing a fantastic job. We got that one. Second take. Thanks for having me on, I guess. This is a bold addition to the show, but I think it makes sense.
Yeah, I think we obviously spoke long and hard about making this, and I think it's I'm more excited about this way because we can chat and get more involved with what we're doing, and that's what I'm looking forward to.
I think we should probably shed some light on why we've chosen this. We actually sat in this room here at the end of season one when it came to recording the intros to the show. And I think it's fair to say because of your dyslexia, you struggled a little with the reading of the script. It doesn't really work. It doesn't add up. In fact, should we just roll the tape of what it was like?
Yeah, let's have a listen.
Hey, Kaz, it's James here. We are just starting to this recording of the podcast. I'm here with Andrew. Say hi, Andrew.
Hello.
Okay, we're going to kick off with the show intro. So this is take one.
Okay, I take it we're going to delete the first one.
Well, we did a take already, Kaz, but we're going to delete that and not send it to you because there's no point.
Oh,
we're
brilliant.
Off to a flying fucking start, you can tell. Whenever you're ready, sir.
My dyslexia challenged me every day, but it was what made me... this is a hard sentence for me.
Should I read it to you and you can say it back?
Yeah, go on. Okay. In this episode, we took...
Start with coming up in this episode.
Coming up in this episode, we talk about the fascinating... I actually need to write this down. Coming up in this episode, we talk about the fascinating... For fuck's sake. I must say, I could really relate to the multi-sensory
approach.
I must say, I could really relate to... That one's got me. I could really relate to Paloma's multi-sensory... No. I could really relate to multi-sensory... No.
Andrew, come on.
I can really relate... I had it in my head. I can really relate to the multi... For fuck's sake. What? I can't even remember what we first said. I really related to Paloma's multi-sensory methods in teaching children... I really relate with Paloma's multi-sensory method of teaching children that she advocates so much. You wouldn't believe how many takes that's taken me. It's still not right. I also asked her what's the biggest advice she would give to parents who have children with dyslexia. No. I also asked her what her biggest advice for was. I also asked, for f-
Fox.
Deep Ray.
Before that, we discussed how... Before that, we discussed how dyslexic people deal with university exams and how other countries... I'm not going to say deal twice. Before that, we discussed university examinations and how other countries deal with subjects like mathematics.
Great. Taz, we're moving on to the episode outro.
Of number two.
Of number two. It's only 4:30.
So as you can see, that was pretty bad.
It wasn't bad. I don't think it was bad. I think it worked really well, but it was just a bit...
It worked. It came out really well, and the feedback, and trust me, that was the main feedback I was going for, was, oh, I thought it worked really well, but I tell you what, it made me cold sweat. It broke my glasses case because I squeezed it so hard at one point, which was a nightmare. And I can't, it just gives you an ultimate respect for people that have to do that for a living.
So I'm here very much to be your aide. I've got a script that the producer of the show, Connor, has written. And through the season, I'm just going to make sure that we're hitting all the points, talking about the important stuff. You and I get on pretty well anyway. We both run businesses. We've got lots in common. So hopefully we can share some of that with the audience. And this will make it more enjoyable for everyone.
Yep. I hope you guys are going to love it. Let's get straight into it.
Definitely. So, season two.
Yes, season two.
We've got some awesome guests coming up. We kick off the season with no less than Cara Toynton.
Yeah, Cara, what a saint.
It was quite a scoop, I think we can agree.
I think Connor, to be fair to him, smashed it out of the park with this season's guests, and Cara was, I was a bit shocked when he told me she was coming on the show. I was like, wow, that's incredible, because... Not many people know, but Cara had done a dyslexia documentary about 10 years ago, and I actually watched it when I was younger, and it actually meant a lot to me then, and even now I still think about it. At the time, I didn't put the two names together, but as soon as Connor told me, I was like, oh my God, she was the one that done that documentary. And I remember sitting there watching that with my family, and that was pretty unreal. And to think that she's now coming on this podcast, that obviously means so much to me, and you, hopefully you guys. It's blown my mind, really.
Yeah, her documentary is called Don't Call Me Stupid,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, which it's funny because my mum told me about this, and I was like, about that podcast that came out, and I was like, but I'm not stupid. But that was the whole point. When she came on the show before, we spoke about the name was supposed to be impactful, that makes people listen to it, and I think that really come across well.
So for anyone who isn't familiar with Cara's story, she is an actress and the winner of Strictly Come Dancing. She's perhaps best known, which is what I recall her for, is playing Dawn Swan in the BBC show EastEnders. But she has a long history of neurodiversity awareness, mm-hmm. which I think is one of the reasons she was passionate to come on the show. And she made a documentary about dyslexia. You guys talk about the spectrum of neurodiversity. You talk about exams and why they're outdated, and also the importance of support from your parents and questioning the medication around neurodiversity, if I'm right. So I think you start by talking about the documentary. I reckon let's roll the tape, shall we?
Let's have a listen. Hi, Cara. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, interesting enough, Connor said to me, you've got to watch your documentary. And I went to start watching and I was like, I've seen it. I watched it when it came out.
No way.
I watched it with my parents. And that's, so, yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, thanks.
Yeah. So it was really interesting to watch, because I find that dyslexia is, the way it's put across is crap. And I think a lot of people see it as a problem. Whereas I never seen what everyone went through. And on your documentary, I saw what you was going through, and it made more sense to me. And that's why I wanted to do this podcast, because a lot of people don't know what it looks like, and a lot of parents don't know what it's going to look like. But when you sit there and go, well, I have problems with that, and that's how I see things. And that's what I said about the documentary. What was that, 10 years ago?
Yeah, it was a while ago. And actually, I probably cringe now, because it's always a shock to me that more people mention to me about that documentary than any of the sort of acting work I've done as my, actual profession of a job. But people come up and sort of thank me for addressing an issue that, to be honest, I thought had been very widely addressed.
Yeah.
But in actual fact, it's a platform that means that someone sees something is a good thing. So I was quite shocked and chuffed, really. But equally, had I done it again, you know, now I think I've learned even more in the 10 years since doing it.
Mm.
And I probably could speak a little better on the subject.
Are you critical about it?
I am critical.
I can't watch my I can't listen to my podcast.
Really?
I can't. There's a... I just, when we release season two, I'm going to put a video out of season one, because I can't do intros and outros because they're scripted. And all I've got this just of me swearing nonstop trying to read scripts. It's like, it was, and I think it's hilarious when I listen back, but I can't listen to myself. Do you, can
Andrew,
you watch
that's an, you're an inspiration to me then, because I would love to do more on the kind of, I suppose, podcast, but I get very nervous about scripts because if I have a night or two to really learn them, I'm absolutely fine and they'll stay with me forever because my long-term memory is quite good. But if you give me a script here and now, it just would be an absolute disaster for everyone.
Well, and it's reading out loud, isn't it? I see. Yeah. So that's what I loved about your documentary, because I was obviously terrible at school and I loved drama. And I wrote off drama because I thought I'm never, ever going to be able to learn lines. And I, in season one, we met Angie Lamar and she said the same thing. She couldn't do scripts. So she was like, I'm just going to make my own stuff and do it on the spur of the moment.
That's the most sensible way, because why should you then not do the thing that you could potentially be really good at? Just because, I mean, I suppose my story is that I was a seven-year-old who the teachers in my school sort of picked up on it very quickly. And at seven, I took the assessment, I was assessed and diagnosed. So I never saw it as a hindrance. Although now I appreciate that many people go through their school and adolescence and into their jobs, not really knowing what's up, but finding certain things difficult. And I think for me, when we were deciding on the title for the documentary, they came up with Don't Call Me Stupid.
Yeah.
And it shocked me because I'd never felt stupid.
No.
And actually doing this documentary, which was something I wanted it to be a positive thing, suddenly stung me for a moment. And then I got over myself and I realized they have to have a little bit of prerogative license to sort of grab you. And
then
you realize, come on, I got it. But it got me.
Yeah.
And just because I've been so lucky that as soon as you find something difficult and then someone says, oh, well, that's because of this. If you have a reason for anything in life, suddenly, as you know, Andrew, you can achieve anything because you're not asking yourself, why can't I do this? Why can't I do that? It's like, well, it's because of this. So find a way around it and make it work. And I suppose what I've always realized with dyslexia is that ultimately it can be such a good thing in a way, because it forces you to think outside of the box. And therefore, you can be quite creative with that. And as soon as you find the tools and ways of doing things, it can be interesting, and it shouldn't cause you any problems, really.
And that, well, you've hit the... It's funny you say about thinking outside the box, because when I talk to people about this, everyone says, "Oh, I was diagnosed with dyslexia when I was about seven. I think we're actually born in the same year, 83. So we're only a few months apart in age, yeah. So your experiences would have been very similar to mine, unless you went to private school. Did you go to private school?
My parents sent me to private school.
Ah, interesting. So this, because I haven't met anyone that went to private school that's my age. So
this is because I feel so weird about it.
Yeah.
Because I say to my dad now, oh, I don't know how I feel about private schools. But equally, I know my dad worked his butt off in order to do that for us. And he wanted to give us the best he could. And I can't I can't be upset at him for doing that for me. Sorry, Andrew.
That's all right.
I've completely plowed over
you. No, that's all right. You've moved on to Priorities Guide now, which is great because that's a conversation I get in Avenue, and that's not even really about dyslexia. All the people I've spoken to about this on the podcast, they said the private schools' experiences with dyslexia are unreal compared to the state school.
Yeah.
Because at state school, I was just went, you're dyslexic, and that was it. There was nothing. That was it. Yeah.
And this is, I suppose, when making the documentary, I sort of set out at the beginning, I said to them, actually, the BBC, I had a meeting with the BBC to do a documentary, and they said, come up with some ideas. And I thought, oh my God, it's fantastic.
Oh, that's cool.
I'm going to go to the Great Wall of China. I was thinking of the most exotic opportunities I could get out of it. And they said, no, we really want something that's personal to you. And at the end of an hour meeting, I said, well, I am really passionate about dyslexia because I'm dyslexic. I know a lot about it. But it's really important for me that I state at the beginning that I've always thought of myself as a very lucky dyslexic, a very fortunate dyslexic, because I've had so much support and help. So I would want to come at it from that angle.
Yeah.
And at the time, to be honest, I thought that, I mean, at the time I was 27 when I made the documentary, and I was sure that in that time, having left school at 16 or whatever, that things would have progressed so that everyone had the same sort of treatment and help as I had as received.
Yeah.
But no, it hadn't moved at all.
No.
And I was interviewing kids who had, oh my goodness, they'd just become the naughty kids because no one saw them. And then they'd actually then been moved, some of them. I mean, God, that, you know, 0.000% had, say, been lucky enough to get into a school that specialised with
neurodiversity. I'm terrible with that.
The needs
they always make words ridiculous for the people that have to say them. I know, why do we keep on making hard words?
I don't know. Yeah. Oh, don't get me started about that, because whoever decided on these spellings were already having a bit of a laugh, I think, because I don't know about you, Andrew, I spell phonetically, you know how it sounds, which completely makes sense.
Well, I think I do, but that I've realised when I...
You put a few spellers in the word.
I am so bad at spelling now, but computers hide it. And you earlier left a voice message for someone rather than typed it, didn't you?
That's become my
And I do that all the time, and people do it to me because there's no point sending me if I won't read it. And when
all these things that they're coming up with that are helping the situation and sort of hiding the situation as well.
Why are you saying called dragon? I think it's dragon dictate or something like that in a meeting recently. And when I come out, I thought it's not going to work. And when I come out, it was completely written down the whole meeting. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. Yeah.
And then it highlights all the ums and ahs.
Well, I got told after the meeting that there's one that if you put in the names of the people and do a test speech, it actually tells you who's saying it throughout the meeting.
So scripts. Yeah.
And I was like, wow. But so when I do that, now when I write, I occasionally write notes in company meetings or something. And the other day I got my team on Friday, I'd done a guess one of my baby's names. So we've got five boys' names and five girls' names. And I said to the team, if you can guess one of them,
then
I'll buy you like a hotel chocolate thing. So unfortunately one of them guessed it, which was a nightmare. But so when they told me the names of the guesses, I thought I'd write down the names. And when I come back, everyone was looking, it was like, what does that say? It was just, it wasn't legible. It just looked like scribble.
I know. But when I was a kid and they used to show a page of writing with like a flower or a bird in the middle of it as an example of what a dyslexic might see, I always found that quite funny because I understood that they had to find a way of describing and sort of picturizing it for people. But I thought, well, I don't see a flower. Maybe some people do. And but it's not really like that for me. And that's the thing with all these neurodiversities. It's every single thing has a spectrum. And dyslexia isn't something you have or you don't have, but it is something that you can have a degree of.
Yeah.
And I really believe that more people than we realize have an element of dyslexia, whether it, you know, I would say on the scale, I'd say I'm a 6-7. There might be people who are 1-2 and up to 10, but it's that interests me. It's not black and white. And equally, dyslexics can have different issues that come up. But am I changing subjects a lot?
That's right.
I feel like I'm not finishing.
Well, it's
one
all right.
Thing.
You're speaking to someone with ADHD, so it doesn't matter where you go. We flex to it. It's all right.
You know what it is? Because we did have a beginning as such, and we got it. That's
how I like the conversation. Yeah, so free.
It's very good.
Yeah.
But because we've been in the L word, which I hate to say, lockdown.
I was wondering where you're going with that.
Do you feel? do you feel in social circumstances, it has taken me a bit of time to get my voice back?
So for me, because I'm a structural engineer and I work in the construction industry, we haven't really locked down. So I have been out all the time, not out like I normally have with clients and stuff. So I couldn't. I'm an extrovert. I love meeting people. I love talking to people.
Talking, and that's
hence why I do a podcast.
Makes sense.
But I could understand where you're coming from, because my wife is being really funny about going out now. And Kazra, who's one of the producers on this show, said he just said earlier that he's struggling so much to go out because he's been in so much. But I can see that. It's different people. And I think introvert and extrovert, I think for most of life, introverts struggle a lot more than extroverts, because we have such a social society. Yeah. But I think the pandemic's quite spun it on its head, introverts have thrived introverts have thrived and extroverts don't know. It's really affected their mental health. I have a few extroverted friends, and when I say extrovert, they are like right on the extrovert side, and they've struggled. Like one of my friends.
So it's a bit of a shock.
Yeah, one of my friends is a guy. He loves cuddling people. Doesn't matter where you go, he hugs you and he's really close to you whenever he talks and everything like that. And he has struggled so badly with it. And now it's all opened again. He's out all the time. And he loves it. He's like a social butterfly.
And I found that I am so excited to be out and about, but equally, I start a conversation with someone and then there's so much to cover. I don't know where to begin. And then I'm jumping and then I'm thinking, is that part of my dyslexia? I suppose what I've found over the years is that people have an issue, don't they, with saying you have dyslexia rather than saying so-and-so is dyslexic.
Yeah.
You know, and I always thought, it doesn't really bother me. I couldn't care less what anyone says. But I think what they're getting at is that it's not like you've got chicken pox. It's not a sort of disease that will come and go. It's something you're born with, brain wise, that will stay with you forever. And I guess I never realized what I could not blame, but I could have dyslexia as my crux for, and what was not the dyslexic side. But I've realized that it's just the way a brain works. And it's not that someone who is dyslexic can't do something as someone with non-dyslexia. It's just a different way of going about it. Yeah. So it's a different journey.
So before this podcast, I never even thought about my dyslexia. So it was really quite random that I went because I was dyslexic, I always felt it gave me edge in other areas, my insane ultra confidence. I always say to people, I've always been overweight. And I said, I'm still probably one of the most confident people you ever meet, even though I'm overweight. But I think dyslexia gave me that. I don't know if it did, but it certainly feels like it did.
I agree. I think it does.
I've always had this life where, and I know one thing dyslexia gives me, which I love, which is I am not scared of anything. Because I had a horrendously crap childhood in school when it comes to work. I failed every exam. As we were saying in my last podcast, I used to sign the exam papers and then just slide it to the end of the table because I knew I wasn't going to pass it. I couldn't even answer any of the questions.
It was, and
it didn't even matter. And I didn't worry about failure. So I've done everything, started businesses, done anything I've ever wanted, and it's worked. I don't fear failure. And I think that's one of the great things. But since I started a podcast and I talked to all these people with dyslexia, and now I found out I had ADHD through a guest on the podcast.
No, really?
Yeah. And I was like, and now I found myself going, I think that's my ADHD. And my wife went, don't you ever say that again. Because I've never used it as a crutch, I know. For anything. But now I always look at things and go, is that my dyslexia? Is that my ADHD?
It's more an internal... As soon as you say it out loud, it's a problem. But yeah. If you say it internally, it's true. It's understanding your own mechanisms.
Yeah.
And I have only just recently realised I think it is, I feel I've got a lot of confidence. Similarly, because growing up, you hit so many boundaries in your way that you just sort of get confident because you've had to overstep them and think, oh, well, sod it, I've just got to do it. And, you know, and it's given me confidence in a different sort of way. And I'm not, like you said, I think if you're not scared of failure, you're not scared of much, really. Because it's like anything that happens is a bonus because, you know that usually you think, oh, well, it's probably all going to, but does that make, yeah.
Because obviously I'm starting to do more PR stuff now for the podcast.
Yeah.
And people say, you're not worried about doing things. I'm like, nope, doesn't bother me. You could push me in front of 2,000 people and say, you've got to give a speech. Mm. As long as they don't make me read it, it's okay.
That would be the only thing. Who wouldn't think that could be the most terrifying thing is it would be
I always watch award shows. Do you know where they put... actors on there and they say, right, read from the cue cards, and they're always disasters. Okay. You see them and you're like, these people are amazing at what they do, and they're reading these corny cue cards, and I'm like, you're probably, because as you know, acting, I think that lends more to people with neurodiversities, and then you're sticking cue cards in front of them and they're reading them, and it's like, you're taking this amazing actor and now they've got to do that and they look stupid.
And actually once when I gave an award and it was on one of those things, and yeah, that's when I come out in a hot sweat.
Oh,
because what, I couldn't even see the blooming thing, and it was just, that's when I get into a panic. I'm just the same. And it's not, I think what I have never had a problem reading. I can read in my head quite happily. It might take me a bit longer, but reading is reading, and you can read or you can't read. But it's just as soon as the speech comes into it, it's like people say, well, what do you see? And I think for me, I tend to look at the word and nothing else is around it. So I look at each word, but whereas normally I think when you read, you scan the whole line. For me, it's just the word. I'm so homing in on the one word that then it just becomes disjointed. And I don't know whether that's like a link up that's, but when they put me under the brain scanning machine, they said, you read English as a kind of good reader would be reading a foreign language that they don't know, sort of thing. And it was that disjointed. And I thought, oh my, wow. That's...
Because when I read, I read each individual word in a paragraph, and then I kind of reread the paragraph as a story, so it comes together. But then...
When you were at school, when you would read a question in an exam, would you have to read it multiple times before you even understood what you were doing?
Yeah, nonstop, over and over again. And I probably still wouldn't necessarily understand it either. And then I might move on to another question and answer that. And then I have to go back and then I read it in a different way.
Yeah.
I do that all the time.
But what do you think if you'd had earphones and they'd given it through? Because this is one of the things I haven't done anything in 10 years, but I love to look at how they give exams, because actually reading, it wasn't that I needed more time. What I actually needed was audio questioning.
Yes.
Because instead of wasting 10 minutes looking at the question going, I don't understand what they want from me. I've done all my revision. I can't have revised anymore, but I don't know what they want from me.
Yeah.
If they'd said, what da-da-da-da-da-da-da in my ear,
yeah,
I would have been able to answer the question straight away.
Yes.
And I don't, in today's world, really is, and then non-dyslexics could also be given audio questioning. And then you wouldn't get this kind of, oh, well, so-and-so had more time than me, so I could have done better if I'd had 20 more minutes. Yeah. And actually making it a fair ground all through it, so that there is none of that, would also help kids not feel awful about it as well.
I think there's good methods, but then for me, I don't understand exams anyway.
In general, yeah.
Because we have exams and we go to school. They teach us to do everything on our own. We do exams that test us to tell you where we are in life. We start work and then we collaborate. That's all we do, collaborate and have all the information in the world at our hands. And so everything we do in school isn't setting us up for the world we live in now.
It's
so,
not for long-term learning and education. It's sort of that short-term, quickly learn it, pass the exam, and then it all goes out the window.
I think it's a way to tell people where they are in life, which is not a good thing to do at all. So, okay, you get A's and B's, so you sit here in life. Mm. I said to my niece, she left school a couple of years ago. She's just leaving college now. And I was trying to explain, she was freaking out about GCSEs. And I said to her, look, your GCSEs are to get you into college. Your A-levels is to get you into university. And your degrees to get you into your first job. After that point, no one will ever ask you about your qualifications again. They're literally keys. And I said, but there are other doors and you don't need to worry about them. And she done really well. So
she did really well anyway. So it's,
anyone that worries about
it becomes the be all and end all, because I suppose it's relative to what they're putting their energy in at that time. But it doesn't mean, going back to the educational side of it, in school, with my parents, I was there first. So they didn't realize what was up, because I was learning the stories off by heart and going home and pretending I could read them perfectly well. So it was kind of a revelation to them. But then they, I suppose, I was just so lucky that that one teacher, Mrs. Jocelyn, picked up on it. Mm. And there's not many teachers out there who are sort of invested in the kids. And if in school you were able to spend time personally, but that's why the private education and having that time and having less kids in the class was so important. Because
how many kids were in your class?
So in my junior school, there were 2 years of 24.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that just sums it up, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So I was given so much.
Yeah.
And in your school, was there different levels for capabilities?
Yeah.
See, that in itself is wrong, because that's setting up a child that you're in the lowest level for this, 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 and this.
Mm.
Actually, if teachers were able to, at the beginning, you know, like when you go, if you go on a trip skiing or surfing or whatever, and they find out your capability and you get put
into
that group. But if it was more about capability of how you learn, whether you're going to take route A, route B, route C, they're all the same.
Yeah.
They're the same, but they're a different, I think what I'm getting at is, it's not a level of intelligence.
Yeah.
It's a level of just which way you're going to go with the teaching. And there's a teacher specializing in this way of teaching. There's a teacher specializing this way. And then you cover all bases. And there's none of this kind of, I'm shit at everything.
Mm. So were you shit at everything? Or did you have things you were amazing at?
Oh, I was... What?
Did you have things that you were amazing at?
Once again, I think it was just my mum and dad. I'm going to get upset, but they just gave me everything.
Mm.
And they, you know, when we found out I was dyslexic, I, we sat down one night and we said, right, what hobbies can I do?
Yeah.
You know, because they wanted me to feel like I could be good at something. So even though I felt really bad at school, and I did, I really, really struggled. And I was one of the lucky ones. So I don't know how, you know, kids in when they're just told you're dyslexic, move on, sort of, that, you know, let's move on. But I was given so much help and I struggled. Yeah. So I can't imagine what it's like for kids out there. But my parents then said, right, let's go. What do you want to do? Horse riding, this, that. And I picked gymnastics. Oh. And that was a game changer because... Yeah. I loved it. I was good at it. It just gave me my thing. And then it didn't matter what went on at school because at 5 o'clock or whatever, I was going to the gym club, you know, doing my backflips. And yeah, that gave me my confidence. And that then went into speech and drama. And it was all kind of this out of school stuff where I was getting my confidence. Was that similar to you?
Yeah, my dad said to me, if you're not going to do well at school, my dad was severely dyslexic. I mean, when I look at my dyslexia compared to him.
Did he get it straight away? It wasn't.
Well, he said they didn't. When he found out I was dyslexic, he said they never used to call it dyslexia when I was younger. They used to just say you were thick. And that was it.
that's the thing.
But he has always said to me, your academic intelligence is completely irrelevant in life because he started a business when he was in his late teens, early 20s and done really well. And that's kind of, he was just like, he said, if you're not going to be good at school, make sure you're good at something else. And that's what I always tell people now when people say to me, because loads of people throw, I've been shocked by how many people have questions that I would have never thought someone would ask. But I've been having parents contact me going, well, what do I do? And I was like, find something they love and then push that. Because there's this guy called, sadly died, Sir Ken Robinson, who done a TED talk. It's the top rated TED talk of all time. He talked about education and he said there was this girl that got brought in because her mum thought, the teachers had told her mum she had something wrong with her. So she took her to this psychiatrist. And by the way, I'm probably butchering this story. So if you should listen to the TED Talk.
Can we do this again tomorrow? Because I just feel like some days you wake up and you can talk and some days you can't. Andrew, you're doing very well. So you carry on. So you're not butchering it at all.
So he said, so the mum took her to a psychiatrist and she said, she spoke to the girl on her own while the parent was out, the mum was outside. And she said, right, just sit in here and I'm going to go outside and speak to your mum. And when she walked out, she put on some music and she walked out and she went, what's your daughter? And the daughter was getting up and dancing. She went, there's nothing wrong with her. She's a dancer. That's what she should do. Some people express themselves in different ways. It is very emotional. Actually always gets me, that story. It's beautiful. And she went on to be the head of the British Ballet and one of the most well-respected ballet dancers in history. But in these days, they would have told her to prescribe her tablets and told her to calm down. That's what they do with children with ADHD. Doctors generally prescribe drugs now, which I used to teach karate and I specialized a lot in teaching kids with neurodiversity. I didn't even know that was a word at the time, but a lot of them had ADHD. And I loved them because they come out with, kids generally come out of the funniest things in the world.
The entertainment, yeah, is sorted.
But I had two children that the parents had put them on tablets to calm them down, and it kind of, you take this creative, crazy kid who's not doing anything wrong, they just view the world differently, and they give them tablets and it puts them back in a box and they're living inside themselves. And I watched it for 6 years as I was teaching them as they all got older, and all the other ones flourished into these amazing children. And the other two were locked into this box the whole time. But what I'm getting at with that is that we spend our lives, because our system tells us that if you're dyslexic or you're this, you should go down this route, and or you're different and it's bad, when in fact, all we are we the creatives of the world. If we went back way back in history, we would have been artists and actors and everything like that, and that you would have been embraced for that. I mean, if you think about it, if we went back in time, they would have told philosophers they were mental. But we have that way, but our school systems tell us that. And the problem is some parents are great and support you. And they go, well, I don't believe there's anything wrong with you. You're going to be amazing. And that's the support you get. Because let's face it, with the support of our parents, we can do anything. And but then you get some that make the wrong decisions. And it's not their fault. They're just using the information they have.
I know. And I feel that I've just become a parent. You know, my son is 2.5. And then I've just had my second. Very emotional anyway. But I do get emotional because I'm suddenly looking at my parents and what they did for us.
Yeah.
And I'm from my sister and myself. And I'm thinking, I'm looking at Frey and it's too early to tell, but I'm excited. Is he going to have that dyslexic link? Is he going to be left-handed, right-handed? What's he going to like? What is he? All these questions to be answered. And I'm so excited to home in on his loves.
Yeah.
And I think we, as people, we probably, and then as parents, we probably look at all the great our parents did and then the few things that we think, oh, that could have been better. And then we get those things right. And then there's a whole, and then your kids have completely different personalities, need completely different set of requirements. Mm. And then you mess up elsewhere that you would never have known about because your childhood was completely different to theirs and they're a different genetic pool. So. Yeah. That's what fascinates me. And I think early on, I've been having conversations recently where people say, give me a child for 7 years and I'll make a man or woman. Mm. Because once that 7 to 9 years has gone, it's very difficult to then get that back. You can't then, oh, through their teenage years, we'll get it right.
Yeah.
It's about immersing every bit of energy. You know, of course you've got to work and you've got to, but it's about finding them and not what you wanted them to be. And I suppose I always find that really interesting in parents where they've had a love and then they want their kids to follow that rather than just enjoying what their kids are meant to be good at and thrive at. And what joy to just see that they're this new energy that's going to go somewhere. And, you know, rather than saying, no, you're going to have your room painted yellow. What colour do they want it? What do they want? And I'm saying to myself now, I have to let go of anything I want them to be. And I'm just so excited.
Andrew, let's just do a quick check-in of where we're at. This has been powerful stuff so far.
Yeah, I mean, as I said earlier, it's straight in. There's no messing. And I think we spoke about a lot of great stuff right at the beginning there.
That whole conversation around not forcing kids to be something they're not and letting them flourish, that's so important.
It is in dyslexia, but then as a person generally, you could tell with how we both are. I think that's important for everyone. You know, everyone's got to lead their own path. And I think, and with dyslexia especially, we try to protect people too much. And it was great to
come. Hi everyone, I just have a quick announcement that I'm really excited to share. We're launching the Invisible Gift Community, a platform designed to provide support and resources for neurodivergent individuals. I've always been passionate about sharing conversations around being neurodivergent, raising awareness and promoting understanding, but I want to do more. So now the Invisible Gift website will offer a range of tools and resources to help neurodivergent individuals navigate the challenges any one of us can face on a daily basis. This includes information about workplace accommodation, tips for managing sensory overload, advice on how to communicate effectively, information for how to get the most out of a neurodivergent child's education, as well as providing the building blocks for them to have a successful life and much more. But to do this, we need your input. We are looking for therapists, influencers, business leaders, HR and brand representatives to provide their input and support. If you're one of these people that wants to support neurodivergence, or if you just believe you can really help out, send my team an email on hello@theinvisiblegift.com and you can find more information on the Invisible Gift website. With your help, we can really turn neurodiversity into possibility. Okay, back to the show.
Kind of be on the same page with that about letting kids flourish on their own.
This is just a reminder that you're listening to the Invisible Gift podcast hosted by the fantastic Andrew Kitley.
That's me.
Coming up, Andrew, you are going to talk to Cara about special reading glasses and how she approaches her kids potentially having a neurodiversity.
Yeah, and it's really great to listen to because I don't have any children yet. I will do in a couple of months' time.
Probably by the time people are listening to this.
By the time this is out, people, I will have a little one. So I'll probably start learning this stuff soon because it is hereditary. But yeah, it was really interesting to hear the new things that come out. And again, because of the documentary, she learned some stuff that I actually didn't know. So it was great to speak to her about it.
First off, though, you spoke to her about something that I know you wish you were better at, and that is learning lines.
Yeah.
Let's have a listen.
Let's get in. So a big question I've got for you, which I'd love to know because I can't get my head around it, is how do you learn lines? Because that is something that's so foreign to me. I'm interested. I'm going to learn from you.
So my first learn lining was learning poems. Because I would do these kind of festivals or lambda exams and you'd have to learn a poem.
Mm-hmm.
And my mum and dad would help me and my sister would get involved. We'd all learn this poem.
Yeah.
And stand and, you know, have fun with it. But it was, so poem learning became my thing that I knew that once a poem had gone in, it would be there possibly forever.
Yeah.
You know, I can remember things, plays I did from years back. I'm sure I could do them tonight. Don't.
Damn it. I was just about to ask.
God, I'll probably get... but don't ask me any questions. I'm not on my best today. But I tend to... So in the documentary, actually, that I made, I got... there was a lady who gave me a way of doing things on post-it notes. So I would put a line on a post-it note and I'd put it on the corner of that chair, the first line. And as I walked towards the chair, I would say the line and stick it on the chair. Then I would say the second line and move towards a different object in the room, like the plant over here, and I would put the second post-it on the plant. Now, this made sense to me because when I had tried to learn lines, they wouldn't go in. As soon as Mum said, "Cara, dinner's ready," I would associate Mum saying, "The dinner's ready," with the line, even though they have nothing to do with each other.
Yeah.
But suddenly that line would go in.
Oh.
So as soon as you join a line with a memory or a colour or a
action
thing
of some kind.
Or an action, it goes in. So when I'm doing a play, I don't worry too much anymore about the lines because at first you do have the script. And although it's uncomfortable, as soon as I'm familiar with it, most of it is plotting. So as soon as I have the plot of where we're moving in the scene, the lines follow.
Oh,
it's about marrying the lines with things.
Yeah.
That's hard to do when you're sight reading. And it's just something that I'm not going to... One thing that helps are my glasses.
Yeah.
I've got a bottle green colour of glass lens.
Yeah.
And as soon as I put them on, it relaxes me for some reason. And I had my first pair when I was 7. How lucky is that? Then I had another test when I did the documentary.
Yeah.
And they do trick you because I thought, but is it that I secretly like green? You know, but no, it's come out to the sort of decimal few pointers here or there to the exactly the same shade of the same green of the same. And the spectrum is large, so it can be any shade of green. So there's something to it.
Yeah.
And then I went for another test not long ago and the same thing happened. So it means that for some reason, that green, and even when I'm not reading sometimes and I'm feeling a bit flustered and overwhelmed, there's a lot going on with reading or whatever, I put them on, it relaxes me. And for some reason, suddenly that thing I was telling you about, if you were to make a paper cone and turn it so you could only see each... like a funnel and look at the page, I see the one word. When I put this particular colour of green in a lens on wearing the glasses, suddenly I can scan the whole line. Have you ever tried them?
No. Are you colourblind?
No.
I am.
Oh. Andrew Sugar!
Yeah, I know. I just can't get a break, can I?
The list goes on.
It really does. No, I do. So I have it on my phone. I have on my iPhone.
Yeah.
I tint it red. So there's a feature in it. It changes, yeah.
And do you find that when you read it does sort of help?
Yeah, completely changes it.
Yeah. Oh, when I had the test when I was 7, the whole room spun round because for an hour my reading was very...
Yeah.
And then, boom, I suddenly read this line with no... And we all thought it was a bit strange and we weren't sure what to believe. But it really does
help. You do get that paranoid about, you know, am I just
falling for another fad.
Sort of
exactly.
Yeah.
But no, it really, I really do, I can't praise the lenses enough.
Dyslexia's runs in the family. How do you, have you thought about it? Because you've got 2 little ones now. How do you think you approach it? Because a lot of the questions I get are not from people with dyslexia. It's from parents, is the bigger network out there. Because obviously parents want to do the best for their kids.
Yeah.
And it's the biggest question of how do I do it? Because there's two main questions. And what I want to do out of this season 2 is answer the questions that so many people asked me from season 1, which was so important.
Right.
And one of them is mainly parents asking about how they would approach their dyslexia with their children if their children are dyslexic.
Well, I'm really excited. I'm looking forward to seeing what my kids develop into, whether they be dyslexic or not, or what they like, or what they are personality wise. Are they going to be really hyperactive or really sort of introverted, and who knows?
Yeah.
But when it comes to dyslexia, it would be fantastic because we're one step ahead of the game, because everything I've learned through this time will just go into making sure that they're one step ahead of where I was. And I think I just feel I have such a respect for education. I don't have a respect necessarily for the way it's carried out.
Mm-hmm.
Like as we said earlier, testing.
Yeah.
You know, it's all short-term little goals that don't really accumulate to anything.
Mm.
And also my dad used to say, why do you want to get an A+ in a test when the pass is a C?
Yeah.
You're wasting your time and effort. You don't get any more for the C than the A+, other than a little victory march.
Mm.
You know, it's different for kids who are going to be a doctor and they need to kind of, you know, if they are academically inclined in the way that the system works at the moment, then great for them.
Mm.
And you can, you know, that can be the direction they go in. But if you have a child who is going to be, you know, very creative and whatnot, they don't need to be getting A-stars in maths. You know, and we tend to learn for, you know, algebra, for instance, different things that you're never going to use outside of those cool four walls.
Unless you're an engineer.
Unless you're an engineer. Oh, God, my goodness. I've really stepped on it.
That's all right. No, but I agree. I said for years.
Were you good at algebra?
No, I was awful at maths at school. It was only until I went, when I decided that I wanted to be an engineer, and I went to university as a mature student, and then I had to learn it all that way. But by that point, YouTube was massive and I could watch everything on YouTube.
And did it become suddenly a sort of, oh, I get this.
Well, maths is a really interesting subject in the fact that it means nothing in its current form. But I've always been obsessed with money, which is, people don't like admitting it, but I love money. It's a great thing. And once people assigned money to things or a reason behind it, it all made sense. So when, obviously, engineering is physics. So once you explained what these letters actually meant, as in that word means false and false is this, everything just started making sense. Whereas when you're looking, I remember the first time I saw algebra and I was like, why are we putting letters where numbers should be and stuff like that? I was like, what the hell is this? But once you understand the reason behind it, and if you I say my dad done the best thing, he actually used to always turn it into money, so I could never I could never ever work out like my times table or dividing or adding. And as soon as he turned it into change and we sat there and went, well, what do you have left? If you take 60p there, how much do you have left of a pound? And I was like, oh, that's easy, because it was money. But they obviously can't do that at school.
But I do, if they put maths into more of a life skills thing. So when you leave here, you're going to all have to pay your tax and you're going to do this. Yeah. And it became a sort of life skill.
Yeah.
I think you would relate to it more. And then when you left school and you did have to pay your tax, it wouldn't be such a shock because you're in the unknown. I mean, I'm lucky because my dad's an accountant.
Oh, wow.
Amazing at maths. But didn't follow through in my sister Hannah and I at all. Mm. We are useless. So, but it kind of, I always felt that my learning was all about, something that you couldn't put a life skill to.
Mm.
And as soon as you said, I loved the going to the shops and buying three apples and four, suddenly that meant something because it was a story and it was real and it was sort of colourful. And I couldn't believe it, actually. People always said, what do you think would have helped you at school? And I thought, well, I don't really know. You know, what could they do? And then I went to that school, Chapwick, which sadly ended in the through the pandemic. And now they've started Abbott's Way. And as soon as I visited Chapwick at the time, I couldn't believe that I entered the classroom and I thought, wow, this would have been it.
Mm.
They were using washing up liquid bottles outside on the playground to spell. So they'd fill them up, they'd shake up the fairy liquid and you'd spell out cat.
Yeah.
But because you were using your body to squirt the letters, suddenly it went in.
Yeah.
Or they would use those little pipe cleaner things to make the shapes of the letters.
So that's kinesthetic learning,
right?
Which is exactly what they're trying to promote more at school for everyone.
Are they?
Not just dyslexics now. Yeah. So the majority of people learn better through either visuals or kinesthetics. Well, again, another hard word to say.
Yeah.
the last question for me then is, you're obviously very open about your dyslexia. And one of the biggest questions, which is really sad, is everyone asks me, is how do you feel about telling people you're dyslexic? Because most people ask me, I want to tell my boss, but I don't think I can.
Even now.
This is people who are our age or younger and they've started work and they worry that it's gonna affect them by telling people. And how do you feel about that?
I think I'm realizing we all have our thing. Everyone has, no one knows what's going on behind closed doors in your own brain, in your own life. We've all got our things.
Mm.
And we're lucky that we're living at a time where I think, you know, of all the things to be handed in the box of cards, the deck of cards, dyslexia actually isn't a great hindrance, or at least it shouldn't be. But you saying that means that it clearly is for some people. But we are living in a time, my stomach's going. We're living in a time where I think we're pushing those boundaries of, it doesn't matter, we've all got some fight on our hands for ourselves that we have to get over. And as soon as it becomes it's normalized and, oh, you're dyslexic, you do things that way, I think most people will find that most bosses who are really successful actually have thought outside of the box, and they will actually see dyslexia as a bit of a good mark, an A-star move, because they'll know that most dyslexics do think in quite an effective way when it comes to business.
Mm.
And, you know, you just hope that they're going to see someone can be given the confidence by you saying something, or maybe myself saying something that honestly, that's not going to affect anything. They just want to see that you're passionate about doing the job well.
Mm.
And as soon as that comes across, dyslexia is just, God, it's not a hindrance. It's a good thing.
It's a gift.
It's a gift. Yeah, exactly.
It's an invisible gift.
It is. So, congratulations.
Thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks, Andrew.
Andrew, what a conversation. I really thought that bit at the end, talking about employers wanting to see how passionate you are and around the idea of dyslexia being a gift and not a problem, I mean, brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, Cara kind of embodies that whole gift message that we're trying to get across, and that's that it is a gift. And as I say, with the life that she's led and what she's achieved, it just proves it in everything. She walks the walk.
I think as well, you won't mind me sharing that there was quite a lot of emotion during that conversation. For anyone listening to the show, it might not have come over, I don't know, but you both nearly cried during that interview at one point.
Yeah, you know, it's connection with people, and she has abundance in the way she connects with people, and she makes you melt when she's in the room, and that's what we really connected on. And the thing is, in every story we discuss with different people, sometimes you see yourself in what they're saying, and sometimes their experiences are so different to yours. And it's really interesting seeing her experiences reflect back on mine.
Oh, absolutely. I really hope that the listeners got a lot from this one. I think it was super powerful. You did a fantastic job, and I'm excited to see the feedback that we get.
Can't wait, and I hope everyone make sure they contact us and with any questions they might have about it, because we live on feedback, guys, and that's really what we want to hear from you. I wanted to really thank Cara for joining me. It's been great, and I really appreciate it for coming on the show.
Connor, the producer, has given me a few notes, so I guess this is my moment to shine. You can follow Cara at Cara_Toynton on Instagram. And if you'd like to watch that documentary that she made a few years ago, it's called Don't Call Me Stupid, and you can find it either on BBC iPlayer or it's also available on YouTube. Andrew, next week on the show, we've got another TV celebrity, star of the CBBC show The Pet Factor and resident Blue Peter vet, Rory Cowlam.
Rory, can't wait for you guys to listen to Rory. What a guy.
He is one of the most charming, warm-hearted people I think I've met in a long time. He was an absolutely brilliant guest when he came here to record his episode.
He's like a person I've been friends with for my whole life, but I only met once so far.
Wasn't he the first person you followed on social media?
Yes. So that's the first person the Invisible Gift followed. And I was like, I've got to meet this guy. We did.
But what's amazing about that story, so Rory was the first dyslexic person that the Invisible Gift followed on social media, and then he got booked onto the show, but those two things weren't connected. The producer didn't know that he'd done that.
Connor didn't know that we followed him, and we spoke about him a lot, and he didn't even come up, and Connor found him, so it just shows you it was fate.
So that episode is out next week Thursday. Make sure you take a listen.
Yep, make sure you guys listen. It's going to be great. You'll love it.
This, Andrew, is the point at which we thank people for listening to The Invisible Gift. We ask them and hope that they will press that follow button wherever they listen to podcasts, whatever app it's in, hit that follow button. You can't subscribe anymore, but you can follow, and what it'll do is automatically notify you when new episodes of The Invisible Gift are released, which I assume everybody wants. Mm-hmm. We would also love for people to write into the show, give your feedback. We'd love to find out more about your neurodiversities and how you use it as a gift. Is that right?
That's it. This show will be nothing without you guys, and the feedback I get from you, I roll into each season afterwards. So it's so important for you guys to let me know any of your stories you have or your experiences so we can get talking about them.
Where should people email?
So if you email me at andrew@theinvisiblegift.com, or go to the website, and there's some ways to contact us there.
And the website, for anyone who's wondering, is www.theinvisiblegift.com. All right, I think that probably wraps this week's episode.
Yeah.
Awesome. See you next week.
I'll see you next week. Just a couple of quick notes before we go. They're important ones. You've been listening to The Invisible Gift podcast, presented by me, Andrew Kitley, and produced by One Fine Play. From One Fine Play, James Bishop is the executive producer. Connor Foley is the editorial producer and researcher. Special thanks to Christina, Izzy, and the Cube Studios. Thank you for listening to the Invisible Gift podcast.